Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and in this half-hour segment, we're going to continue with our look at the attempts of international fascism, Nazism, the Underground Reich, and elements associated with the Bormann Organization to alter world opinion in such a way as to pave the way for a return of Nazism. I've termed this pair of half-hour segments Hearts and Minds, and I want to stress again that certain avenues of approach and certain cultural milieu are being used to woo people to the Nazi cause and to the fascist cause who would not otherwise be so seduced. I also want to stress that I don't want to be confused as character. I don't want to be misunderstood as characterizing these avenues of approach as fascism. For example, in For the Record segments 172 about the Nazi mystic Savitri Devi, we took a look at some of the aspects of the New Age which have been utilized to promote fascist and Nazi sentiment. This is not to say that all or most of the New Age is fascist, but rather that is one of many avenues of approach. In For the Record segments 122 and 123 and follow-up broadcasts in 135 and 152, we took a look at control of American publishing by German corporations associated with the Bormann Group, in particular the Bertelsmann Company, founded by Heinrich Mohn, who was SS. For those people who find the book Serpent's Walk that I've discussed ludicrous, just bear in mind that American publishing is controlled by a firm founded by a man who was in the SS, Heinrich Mohn. His son, Reinhard Mohn, was in the elite Hermann Goering Division, and there are very strong connections between the Thyssen Industrial Group and Bertelsmann. The Thyssen Group is one of the primary elements of the Bormann Organization. Bertelsmann, again founded by SS man Heinrich Mohn and wielding a profound influence in the American opinion-forming media, is also the number two music publisher, or music firm in the United States. Bertelsmann owns Arista and RCA Records, and they are the number two music distributor in the United States as well. This is discussed in the book Global Dreams. They don't mention the latest sales figures, but Bertelsmann is number two in the United States, and I believe in the world as a whole. A good discussion of Bertelsmann and its music business is contained in the book Global Dreams, subtitled Imperial Corporations and the New World Order. That book was published in hardcover by Richard J. Barnett and John Cavanaugh. The book was published in hardcover by Simon & Schuster, copyright 1994. The ISBN number is 0-671-63377-5. And bear in mind that Bertelsmann, the same company founded by SS man Heinrich Mohn that controls American publishing, and along with the von Holtzbrinck firm, they have the lion's share of American publishing. The Bertelsmann firm, as I said, is number two in music in the United States, and they own Arista and RCA. In Global Dreams, Imperial Corporations and the New World Order, authors Barnett and Cavanaugh write as follows about Bertelsmann and music. Had anyone in 1975 predicted that the two oldest and most famous corporate producers and marketers of American recorded music would end up in the hands of German printers and publishers and Japanese physicists and electronic engineers, the reaction of the industry would have been astonishment. By the early 1980s, the notion provoked nervous laughter. How would Bertelsmann and Sony ever be able to manage the weird cast of creative characters who make up the record business? Why would they want to try? By the late 1980s, it had happened. Quote, "We knew we had to be in the United States in a big way. It is the world's largest media market. To be just in Europe, it's too narrow," unquote. Michael Dornemann, the man who masterminded Bertelsmann's major acquisitions in the United States, explained to skeptical business reporters a few months after negotiating the purchase of RCA Records for what industry pundits considered a highly inflated price. And, skipping down still more, after 5 years under Bertelsmann management, RCA profits grew and Arista was doing well, but neither company had to, quote, had yet to break a new superstar. I would note that music also is one of the avenues in which the contemporary generation of Nazis are making a serious effort at affecting the minds of youth. There's a Nazi-oriented band called Rammstein that was one of the influences on those two little Nazi brats, Klebold and Harris, who went off at Columbine High in Littleton. Columbine High has been plagued with swastikas carved into the masonry and the walls in the time since Klebold and Harris pulled their escapade on Hitler's birthday in 1999. Klebold and Harris are now dead, so who's carving the swastikas, I would note with regard to Bertelsmann that the artists that they're promoting with their big labels tend to be pop artists such as Rick Astley or Whitney Houston or people of that ilk. However, I think people should keep a close eye not only on Bertelsmann but on perhaps some smaller labels that might be getting funded under the table by Bertelsmann or similar interests. I think people should also keep a very close eye on some of their major publishers and artists and see whether perhaps fascism and Nazism are not promoted in some way by some of these individuals. I would note, again, that Nazi music is something that is growing in popularity among some segments of youth, and what I find more disturbing is that not Nazi music, but music that overlaps the culture of fascism, although not embracing the political system of fascism, is becoming very popular indeed. There are some aspects of youth culture that are openly admiring of satanic religion. The Church of Satan is something of a counterculture protest icon to some young people today. This actually had its origins in the 1980s when many young people saw the satanic philosophy of the Church of Satan as something of a counterculture protest against right-wing born-again Christians. I would note that not only satanic culture such as the Church of Satan of the late Anton LaVey, a man who himself had one of the largest collections of Nazi memorabilia, I would note that many of the young people who have embraced the culture of Satanism are neither practicing Satanists themselves, and they most assuredly are not Nazis, and if asked, would be opposed to Nazi activity. But nonetheless, they have become accustomed to a culture that culturally overlaps fascism, and I have found that this makes many of these people, it has desensitized them to the actual political aspects of fascism. One of the cultures that overlaps Nazism in the youth subculture is the culture of so-called black metal. That is a genre of very hard-driving, sort of raunchy rock music that is not Nazi or fascist in and of itself, but some aspects of black metal and some of the bands are explicitly Nazi, and I've found a lot of young people or people who are exponents of this particular culture to have become desensitized to the Nazi aspect of some of these bands. Again, I want to stress these people are not only not Nazis or fascists, but are opposed to Nazism or fascism, and yet I have seen some of them become seduced and have become far more comfy with overt Nazi bands and outright fascist expression than they otherwise should be. It's because they have become culturally desensitized to the political aspects that characterize fascism. We're going to turn now to the Searchlight magazine. The Searchlight is a British anti-fascist publication, not to be confused with the American Spotlight. Very similar name, but the American Spotlight is fascist. The British Searchlight is anti-fascist. You can reach the Searchlight at 37B as in boy, New Cavendish Street, Cavendish. That's at London, William 1 Mary 8 Jolly Roger, London, W1M8JR. And you can reach them by telephone at 0207-284-4040, fax 0207-284-4410. You can email the Searchlight at editors@s-light.demon.co.uk. That's editors@s-light.demon.co.uk. Their website is at s-light.demon.co.uk. And in the Searchlight's September 1999 issue, there's an article about Nazi music called Music That Maims. Now, the major focal point here is Nazi music in Germany. This article was authored by Eike Wunderlich and Hans Wohlrab, and it talks about the Nazi music scene and the youth culture in Germany, but I think some of their observations about the black metal scene and some aspects of goth culture, by no means fascist, and in fact, many of the people involved with these are opposed to fascism, yet I have found people who were involved with these cultures to be as I've said, desensitized to the political aspects of Nazism, and I found that some of them have been consequently seduced. Turning to Music That Maims by Eike Wunderlich and Hans Wohlrab, we read, Nazi ideas no longer carry any stigma among the young. So it is no surprise that the German rock band Rammstein, whose latest video features extract from Leni Riefenstahl's notorious Nazi propaganda film Olympiad 1936, has rocketed into the top 10. It'd be interesting to see who publishes Rammstein, whether perhaps it's Bertelsmann. And skipping down about the black metal culture and related musical cultures that had been used by Nazi bands to approach youth who, again, lest I be misunderstood, are not only not Nazis but are opposed to it, yet can be seduced to the Nazi viewpoint by the cultural desensitization that comes from some of these milieu. Some of the Nazi bands and musicians to be careful of, by the way, there's a group called Blood Axis and a fellow named Michael Moynihan, who has been quoted as saying he thought Hitler was a moderate. One should be careful of Blood Axis. There's a fellow who's quite popular named Boyd Rice, who's a member of the ruling Circle of Nine of the Church of Satan and who keeps a life-size picture of Adolf Hitler in his living room, or at least used to. And Boyd Rice is a flat-out Nazi and is an unapologetic exponent of Hitler's philosophy. And he's quite popular in certain youth circles. Obviously, Rammstein is another group to keep one's eye on. There are groups like the Hammerskins and Blood and Honor. And in general, I have found the iconography of Nazism to be very present in the black metal scene. And I've found a lot of young people who, again, are in and of themselves opposed to Nazism to be seduced and desensitized to fascism and Nazism. Skipping down in this article of the black metal scene, we read, the concerts enable the dissemination of illegal propaganda material and bring the various strands together. For example, in August last year, the dark wave band Blood Axis staged a concert in Hanover for a motley audience of Nazis, Gothics, standing next to typical Nazi skins. The Gothics belong to the dark wave scene and sometimes call themselves the black scene because of their clothing, but their music encompasses a variety of styles. Largely electronic, it is depressive, melancholy, and above all, pensive. In contrast to the inherently violent Nazi skins, the black scene is passive and even intellectual. Evolving from the 1970s punk and new wave movements, the black scene rapidly developed its own fashion styles and music, as well as its characteristic preoccupation with death, the quote, meaning of life, unquote, romanticism, mysticism, and paganism. It has a surprisingly wide range of musical components. Dark wave rubs shoulders with neo-folk, ambient electronic body music, dark metal, gothic rock, and industrial, to name but a few. This formerly secretive underground scene has boomed in recent years. Black fanzines such as the glossy Zillow, Z-I-L-L-O, have circulations of tens of thousands and can be bought at almost every kiosk, while music festivals such as the Whitson Wave Gothic event and the Zillow Festival in August attract as many as 20,000 people. Adherents regard themselves as unpolitical, but their anti-modern cultural pessimism, mysticism, and existentialism overlap with fascist thinking. Philosophers such as Ernst Jünger, Julius Evola, and Friedrich Nietzsche, and Italian futurists such as Marinetti and D'Annunzio have icon status on the right of the black scene. The images and sounds of Nazism are frequently integrated into the music and used at concerts. Nevertheless, the right-wing element, which only really emerged after the fall of the Berlin Wall in 1989, remains small. Again, I want to stress this is not a fascist milieu, that these people, and many of them, are actually opposed to fascism and are among the more gentle members of the younger sections of a society. But nonetheless, I have seen firsthand how people of that orientation can be seduced and desensitized to this type of music. That is to say, Nazi music. So again, in addition to the activities of companies like Bertelsmann, it'd be interesting to know who publishes Rammstein. We should be very careful of the dark metal or black metal scene, not fascist or Nazi, but overlapping the culture of fascism and being used by Nazi elements to infiltrate and seduce young people who would otherwise not be sympathetic to their political message. In For the Record segments 172, a pair of segments about Nazi mystic and contemporary Nazi icon Savitri Devi, we took a look at how some elements of Nazi philosophy can be merged into New Age philosophy in order to use the New Age to seduce people to the Nazi viewpoint or fascist viewpoint. Again, I'm not suggesting that all or even most of the New Age is fascist. In fact, many of the people attracted to New Age are extremely gentle people themselves. But nonetheless, it is fundamentally irrationalist, and once you throw your brain in the toilet, you are leaving yourselves wide open. And I have found many outright Nazi elements to have been very successful in infiltrating the New Age and persuading people in a New Age, in the New Age milieu. Savitri Devi, for example, has one of her titles published by the Rosicrucians, based right here in San Jose. And beyond that, Julius Evola, the Nazi mystic cited in that article from the Searchlight I just read, is an individual who has some of his titles in New Age bookstores, and perhaps most disgustingly, Albert Pike, who not only was chief of military intelligence for the Confederate armies in the American Civil War, but who was a disciple of an occultist named Eliphas Levi, and was also the co-founder of the Ku Klux Klan, along with General Nathan Bedford Forrest, another Confederate general and disciple of Eliphas Levi. Albert Pike is also very big in New Age circles, and that is something to pay very close attention to. If people think that I'm alarmist in some of my concerns here, when the co-founder of the Ku Klux Klan becomes big in New Age circles, it's time for a change, ladies and gentlemen. Turning once again to the book Hitler's Priestess by Hitler's Priestess by Nicholas Goodrich Clark, subtitled Savitri Devi, The Hindu Aryan Myth and Neo-Nazism, published in hardcover by New York University Press and copyright 1998. ISBN number 0-8147-3110-4. And of the fascism and Nazism's appeals to the New Age, and in their attempts to use the New Age as yet another avenue of approach, we read, in the New Age movement, there are now numerous groups devoted to reviving the wisdom of the ancient Celts and Teutons, Druids and old Germanic priest kings, witches, and priestesses now provide New Age precursors closer to home and Western identity. Books, workshops, and conferences on paganism, shamanism, runes, and magic proliferate. The Anglo-American Asutru Free Assembly and Odinists revived Neo-Germanic paganism, while in Germany Neo-Folkish groups such as the Goden and Armannenschaft, a revival of the Guido von Liszt Society, swiftly reoriented themselves toward the New Age concerned with feminism, ecology, and esoteric lore. The Aryan mysticism of Julius Evola was rediscovered by New Age publications. Nostalgia for a lost golden age and apocalyptic hopes of its revival recall the ideological foreground of earlier demands for fascist renewal. Deep ecology, biocentrism, nature worship, and New Age paganism reflect a hostility toward Christianity, rationalism, and liberalism in modern society. Although these radical movements often have their roots in left-wing dissent, their increasing tendency toward myth and despair indicate their susceptibility to millenarian and mystical ideas on the far right. Neo-Nazi and fascist activists now actively seek to infiltrate the ecological and esoteric scene. The cybernetic encirclement of man and his complete divorce from nature could well foster a more fundamental alienation. In a congested and automated world, Savitri Devi's sentimental love of animals and hatred of the masses may find new followers. The pessimism of the Kali Yuga and her vision of a pristine new Aryan order possess a perennial appeal in times of uncertainty and change. That passage, I think, sums up the nature of the attempts on the part of Nazi and fascist elements to appeal to the New Age, and we're going to take a look at an aspect of Nazi occultism, something we've dealt with in a number of other programs, including a four-part series entitled The Ultimate Evil, Nazism, Satanism, and the U.S. National Security Establishment. Also, in a couple of half-hour segments, one of them about the Order of the Solar Temple, and another one about Nazi occultism in Latin America. We're going to take a look at some of the material being disseminated by a Nazi publisher called Samizdat Publishers. That is run by a fellow named Ernst Zundel. We dealt with Ernst Zundel and Samizdat in the pair of half-hour segments about Savitri Devi. And we're going to turn once again to the book Hitler's Priestess by Nicholas Goodrich Clark about Savitri Devi in order to take a look at some of the mystification of the Nazi development of what later were called UFOs. These were actually anti-aircraft devices whose unusual physical configuration were designed to evade radar. And there's actually a fairly well-documented history of the development of so-called flying saucers. They don't come from outer space. The aliens is an okey-doke. There are no space aliens. At least there have never been any that have visited Earth. That is a readily verifiable fraud, but UFOs are real, and it's why I think people need to be very aware of this, lest they be seduced when real UFOs come down, and we're told, you know, this is our brothers from space, and that they really kind of liked Adolf Hitler, and that Hitler evolved from them, etc., etc. The incorporation of the aspects of truth about the Nazi development of flying saucers and its mixture with Nazi occultism and outright BS is discussed in the book Hitler's Priestess as follows. Since the early 1970s, speaking of Ernst Zundel, his neo-Nazi publishing house Samizdat had been issuing tracts on Holocaust denial, including T.S. Christofferson's Auschwitz, Truth or Lie, which was a runaway success among anti-Zionists, the far right, and German patriots in the United States. It also had made money for Zundel and established Samizdat as a flourishing underground Nazi publishing concern. By the summer of 1979, more than 100,000 copies of the book in five languages had been sold. At this time, Zundel was also pandering to the market for mysteries and occultism with books on Nazi UFOs that were based at secret German post-war bases in Antarctica. Willibald Matern, a German émigré in Santiago de Chile, had spun a powerful tale of Nazi resurgence. His book, UFOs, Unidentified Flying Object, Last Secret Weapon of the Third Reich, 1974, described how thousands of Nazi UFOs will one day fly far from the South Pole to restore German world power against a scenario of increasing racial chaos and economic catastrophe in a final act of deliverance. Matern's work was a resounding underground success in West Germany, linking the market for mysteries and extraterrestrial visitations with millenarian myths of German salvation. Zundel lost no time in publishing an abridged English-language version which introduced yet more occult speculations. Did the Nazis in Antarctica gain access to the inner Earth, long ago described in Nordic legends and sagas and assiduously cultivated by the Thule Society? Had the Nazis discovered long-hidden secrets on their expeditions to the Himalayas and Tibet? Note the glorification of the Nazi expeditions to Tibet, and my ruminations in the first half-hour segment about the movie 7 Years in Tibet, which essentially whitewashes and portrays as a hero SS man Heinrich Harrer. Continuing. Perhaps extraterrestrials from other galaxies had assisted the Germans with the saucer projects, having recognized their receptiveness to the new technology. Note this one, the notion that Germans had gotten help from aliens. We're going to come back to this. Perhaps this collaboration was based on some shared ancestral kinship. Zundel recalled Reinhold Schmidt's account of a Saturnian spacecraft whose crew spoke German and behaved like German soldiers, and speculated whether the German nation was indeed a colony of Saturn long since settled on Earth. Why were the Germans so, quote, different, unquote? Could this explain why the Germans always excel as soldiers, engineers, and technologists? Was Hitler planted on this planet to pull back Western civilization from the brink of degenerate self-extinction? Besides the Matern book, Samizdat also published Zundel's own books on the German Antarctic theme, Secret Nazi Polar Expeditions and Hitler am Südpol, 1979. In the former, Zundel dilated on the enigma of extensive German wartime activity involving bases, mountain troops, and U-boats within the Arctic Circle. He asked whether there was a shortcut from the Arctic to Antarctica, and it goes on about the mixture of reality concerning German flying saucer development and absolute BS. I mention this because not only that particular mixture of history and occultism, but the very type of research that I'm engaged in is yet another of those avenues of approach. To make a long story short, once somebody who has grown up believing in official history realizes that, in fact, Lee Harvey Oswald didn't kill President Kennedy, and that, in fact, Sirhan Sirhan didn't kill Robert Kennedy, and James Earl Ray did not kill Martin Luther King, and a whole lot of other things were not as they were told, it leaves them in a relativistic mental state in which they wonder, well, gee, maybe the Holocaust didn't happen. And it is in the context of this type of research that Nazi elements have also been attempting to win hearts and minds. One should be very, very careful of conspiracy research. I don't like that term, but that's the term usually applied to this type of work. It, too, is being used to woo people to the fascist and Nazi viewpoint. A listener sent me a comic book, which is a very bizarre comic book, but which obviously is proto-Nazi and is very much taken with the Nazi UFO aspect, and it also is overtly fantastic in some ways. This is a series of comic books put out by the Antarctic Press, co-authored by Ben Dunn and Ted Nomura. This particular comic book is called Luftwaffe 1946, and it's subtitled Project Saucer. And this publication's called, they call themselves Families of Altered Wars, and they're obviously very taken with the Nazi UFO myth and fall right in the same line of approach as Ernst Zundel and his writings on the Nazi UFOs. And in this regard, I cite the following in the letters to the editor. Dear Ted, I address this letter informally because I have been a subscriber to Luftwaffe 1946 for some time, and I feel like I know you're thinking a bit. My congratulations. You and Ben Dunn have done well in both art and script. Your work is both a visual treat, especially for us Third Reich students, and a thought-provoking narrative. And, skipping down, I am particularly intrigued with your Project Saucer subplot. Again, you were dealing with material which has interested me for many years. I am enclosing a copy of my latest book, Alien Agenda, for your perusal. This writer and this book is none other than Jim Mars, the author of Crossfire, and one of the people who was heavily involved with the making of Oliver Stone's movie JFK. It's an excellent movie, but the book Alien Agenda basically endorses the notion that the Third Reich was in touch with aliens, and that's who gave them that technology, and that is readily verifiable fascist nonsense. And beyond that, we see the following, too, from Jim Mars, skipping down in this letter. The real horror of the Reich was not that a few sadistic guards killed wards of the state, but that a bureaucracy devoid of compassion and responsibility was created, which could methodically order the deaths of thousands. Notice I said thousands. I'm not getting into the numbers game of the Holocaust. Undoubtedly, the figure of 6 million is greatly inflated. This is precisely the avenue of approach that fascist and Nazi elements are using, the type of research that I do in order to seduce people. And a note again, Jim Mars' standing in the research community. He's the author of Crossfire, was one of the influences on Oliver Stone's JFK movie, which I don't think should be condemned for that reason. It's an excellent movie. But note here that not only does Jim Mars endorse the aliens have been in touch with the Germans, the same sort of occult nonsense that Ernst Zundel and Samizdat Publishers has been touting, but indeed, here we have Jim Mars engaging in Holocaust denial. It's not that most of the Holocaust deniers now claim that it never happened. They simply reduce the numbers. They say it's a few thousand and there were no gas chambers, etc. And with Jim Mars endorsing the untenable aliens have contacted us scenario, and now engaging in Holocaust revisionism, I think serious researchers have to begin viewing Jim Mars with a very jaundiced eye indeed. And beyond that, people should be very careful. Not that one should not engage in this type of work, but one should scrutinize this type of research very, very carefully, because it is yet another of those bridges that Nazi elements have thrown over the cultural river in order to obtain advantage. That concludes this segment. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.